Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to episode 15 of season 7. It's called Lower Decks. Directed by Gabriel Beaumont. Teleplay goes to Rene Echevarria. Story goes to Ron Wilkerson and Louise Mateus. And it aired back on February 7th, 1994. While enduring the Enterprise's promotion evaluation process, four junior officers find themselves involved in a top secret mission. Trekabout is here. Eric and Richard from the Trekabout podcast are here to discuss Lower Decks. It's one of those episodes. Take that to mean what you will. But anyway, right after this break, me, Eric, and Richard are going to go deep on Lower Decks.
The Agaia system's close to the Cardassian border. I wonder why we're going there. How'd you like to be a spider under that table?
What?
A spider under the table?
Is that like a fly on the wall?
I guess so. You did really well during the drill.
Well, apparently Commander Riker didn't think so. I swear he's got it in for me.
You're imagining things.
Yeah? And how come you're sitting in that chair instead of me?
I guess he figured I needed more practice than you do.
Hello, Trekabout. Welcome back to the podcast. How are you?
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome
back.
Doing
well.
We're in Trump's camps.
Good. Yeah. Well, welcome to the only pro-Trump Star Trek podcast on the network. I'm glad
we should go.
Yeah.
It's time for fun re-education time.
How did you're in a state that went blue, I'm assuming, right? You're still on the West Coast.
Yeah, all three states I've lived in went blue in my lifetime. So I was very proud of that.
Jersey would probably be the closest one, right? I would assume.
I don't remember how far it was, but Jersey traditionally goes Democrat.
Jersey's about 2,500 miles from here.
Oh. Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, I also live in Massachusetts, obviously, and it's never really any sort of... I've never experienced a state where anything is up in the air regarding these kinds of things. And so it's a little bit unique, I guess, to be in a position where that doesn't happen.
Well, we were worried about Oregon, actually, because, you know, Portland is super liberal, and then there's some outside Portland. The three towns outside Portland are not.
Right.
I wasn't worried about it. Although I did take a little impromptu trip with my dog last month to the southeastern portion of Oregon, which I had never been to. Like, Crater Lake is there, and I went to Bend, and you're pretty much in the middle of nowhere, and there were quite a lot of Trump Pence signs out there. So.
Yeah, I think I was looking at a map, and it kind of struck. It's really only, you know, the cities out in Oregon that consistently go Democratic. So it's, I guess, it's just the nature of the population out there and everything. But
yeah, because nobody actually lives in the places where the counties actually go for
right
Trump.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep. Well,
all 17 of the people in that county all go vote for Trump, and that's about it.
Yeah.
I would have been a little bit worried that maybe Portland would be so left wing as to convince themselves that Trump was the better choice, because I feel that's something that kind of happened. I guess that might not have been the case out there, but who knows? Anyway, you guys want to talk about Lower Decks?
Sure.
I gave you guys the option of picking episodes. So, do you want to explain to me why you picked Lower Decks?
I think we picked them because I don't really like most of the seventh season of TNG. I find it's just kind of boring. And I don't really like Lower Decks either, which maybe I'll be the minority on this podcast.
Yeah.
But I just kind of felt like Lower Decks and Preemptive Strike were perhaps the most interesting episodes that we could talk about.
I mean, I know that when seeing that Lower Decks was one of the possibilities, I definitely did want to see it, partially because at the point when we had seen it on our own podcast, we obviously hadn't started with DS9, and since it does have some resonances with the Bajor versus Cardassia plot there, I was interested in that. And I'm fond of the episode in general. I do like that it's a very different episode in a lot of ways, and I think it is a good one, personally. I am curious to see why you do not quite like it.
we'll get to why Eric might not like it. I guess I'll say that Lower Decks is going to continue something that the other people who've done the podcast have sort of been talking about, and I kind of agree with, which is everyone's a little bit disappointed in what Season 7 is trying to do for TNG.
It was trying to do something?
Well, it's so not trying to do something that it's kind of bizarre. Like, we just figure that in the show's last season, everyone knows that this is it at this point. They aren't really taking a lot of chances, and Lower Decks is probably the first episode that takes a pretty big swing at the ball, and I think they do a pretty good job with connecting at it. It's really just surprising me how dull Season 7 is overall.
Yeah, Season 7 is actually really dull, and it's funny because we are in the middle of Season 7 of DS9 right now on Trekabout, and it's really instructive for me specifically to see, you know, just how not ready I am for DS9 to end, even though it was actually a little bit shorter than TNG, but not by much, because the first season was 20 episodes and TNG's first season was 26. And I think the difference there is that, you know, DS9 did a lot of two things. You know, DS9 did a lot with ongoing storylines that you want to see resolved. And also DS9 did a ton with secondary characters that are almost as well developed as the primary characters. Whereas in TNG, the seventh season is just like, we're out of ideas. What are we going to do? And I think you really see that because there are no ongoing storylines that they need to finish. And there's also really no secondary characters that they can lean on very much.
Yeah. In this episode, we have Nurse Ogawa, who we've seen plenty of by this point. This is the most, I think, personal information we find out about her. I think it's the most that we talk that she's more than just a simple device in a lot of ways. But we also have the when Bajoran person who was from what the fuck is the episode called?
Oh, the first duty.
Yeah, but this is also the first time we've seen her in between then, and there is one of the things we talked a lot about in DS9 is the understanding that the show has an idea of what these characters are doing when they're not on the episodes. I mean, she says she's been on the Enterprise for 7 months, and this is the first we're seeing her in this episode. You know what
right.
I mean? She just kind of appears from nowhere because, all right, let's get another character. And meanwhile, these other two characters, the Vulcan, the one hotshot cadet looking guy, and then the bartender, we never see them again.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, were you guys a little bit surprised at how little they prep the audience about what the relationship for Ensign Cito is? Like, Picard never goes, you were in that episode with Wesley Crusher, remember? Like, they don't really actively remind the audience.
Yeah, if you haven't seen the episode.
Yeah, you might.
I think it's one of those things where it doesn't really matter so much. I mean, I think the reason why they don't do that is because it would probably confuse things a little too much.
Yep.
And they get the idea across enough that she fucked up at the Academy somehow, and it doesn't really matter how. And so if you have the additional context of having seen the first duty, then that will go, oh yeah, hey, I remember her. That's cool that they brought her back and are doing something with her. If you've never seen that episode, you kind of get this vague idea that she did something bad, and fill in the blank. What was it? She murdered someone. She, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Yeah.
So,
in the context, they make it seem a prank gone wrong or a misadventure kind of a thing, which is essentially
what did happen. Or she blew up San Francisco.
Well,
save that for the movies. That's what happens in the movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for spoiling it.
Sure. The you know, the Cito thing, I guess, is the fact that she's brought back, and I kind of agree that I think it almost works better if you don't know the first duty episode. I think that they write it to the point where it's much more sort of leaving it to your imagination works better in a lot of ways. Because what ultimately happens to her I don't feel really fits what happened in the first. Like, I never thought that the first duty with the crime they did was, like, you know, it's bad, but it's not like it's the worst kind of bad that can possibly happen, because they couldn't have written Wesley Crusher to do something very, very bad.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's kind of better if you don't really know what actually happened. But outside of that, I'll fire off at you guys. I think this episode might have, in the midst of a sea of mediocrity that is season 7, it might have one of the best scripts that the show has ever done. Thoughts?
I really don't like this episode. I think that it's technically very well done. I think that the show is, this is the one kind of quote unquote stylistically experimental episode of the season, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely in a vein of some other stuff that the show has done. I just don't know why we need to see this. I'm finding that, you know, TNG is certainly a good show. I think that I underestimated The Next Generation for a number of years, especially with how obsessed I was with Deep Space Nine. And, you know, rewatching it for Trek about, you know, a year and a half ago or 2 years ago at this point, I was really struck by the fact that the show is, you know, more than the sum of its parts. It really does have very light serialization throughout it. The characters do, you know, remember things. And it's just a very, very well-written show and well-acted show. And this episode is very professionally done. Everyone is doing a great job. The script is solid, but it just feels like they had this idea kicking around for a number of years and pulled it out now, because the seventh season, as you said, is just kind of mediocre. And I don't know what we really learned from this episode. I don't know. None of the characters in the episode that are introduced for this one episode and never appear again are very interesting. It's all very sort of stereotypical and samey to me.
Well, I guess in a lot of ways, this is doing something that DS9 has made somewhat redundant. In other words, with The Next Generation, a legitimate issue with it is that we are focusing almost entirely on the bridge crew, on the most elite of the... Now, you have characters like Barclay who aren't the number one, you know, who are a little more grunty in terms of who's on the Enterprise. And so I do like seeing the adventures of some people who are just very outside of the circle of power, right? The entire plot that's going around in the episode where it's this mission to get this Cardassian back, I mean, it happens in fragments. We don't actually get very many scenes with the... You could see in a standard episode which would have focused on the bridge crew, you know what this episode would have been. We would have seen them in the conference room discussing this. So it is nice to get some outside perspective. That said, DS9 does so much more of a better job with an even more outside perspective. I mean, because all of these four people are Starfleet through and through, and Federation through and through. Even the bartender is a Federation citizen. Deep Space Nine giving us characters like Garak and Quark, famously the root beer monologue, giving very much the outside of the Federation perspective. And I guess since we've already had the outside the Federation perspective, since the crew of DS9 starts off as not the elite of Starfleet in a lot of ways, again, DS9 feels like it already covered this ground a little better, a little more sophisticated. I guess I could see that argument.
I guess my counter argument would be, this is mostly feeding into like what we've talked about earlier in the season. Like, I really feel that the show needed to do an episode like this at a certain point. Like, they need to stretch themselves a little bit more than they are. It's surprising that they don't, but I do think that it's like it's kind of an odd thing. Like, the more I start thinking about it, it's like, it's funny to me in this, you know, Roddenberry's utopian post scarcity type situation. Jobs are still scarce, you know, for like promotions are still not given out. And it's funny that this is like, it seems to be the one kind of competitive thing that's left in anybody's life inside the Federation.
And yet they are very nice and polite about it. I mean, you have these two who are vying for the same position, but it doesn't get ugly at all. They more question their own competence for it rather than, you know, why is she up for this promotion? She's not good enough. You know, it's more of why am I not going to get
this? That's true. They're still very friendly. I do think it's funny that, yeah, like, if you're on the top of the food chain, you kind of fit the Roddenberry's ideals better than if you move, like, slightly below. Everyone's slightly starting to bicker a little bit at that point about things. And they have, I was shocked to learn you're forced to have a roommate if you're an ensign.
Yeah, which seems weird because the Enterprise is, I think, what, the largest ship in Starfleet?
And,
if,
and we've never had...
And we know that the ensigns on Voyager didn't have roommates. Mm-hmm. So, and Voyager's a much smaller ship than Enterprise. So I'm not really sure why that's the case. It's that I don't know. I just feel like Lower Decks to me, I get what you're saying. I think it's well done. I think everyone is acting the hell out of it. But I don't see the point of it.
It seems you're treating this almost like a blockbuster movie or a pop song where you can say that, you know, everything on a technical level is very excellently done and every story beat is happening at the right spot. And, you know, there's no flaws that you can find, but it's not scruffy enough to hit greatness in some ways.
Yeah, it feels to me like a TNG late series episode that is trying to ape DS9 a little bit and not doing a very good job of it when that's not the strength of this show.
Where was DS9 at this point, season-wise?
I can look it up. So while I look that up, I guess my counter-argument would be, not counter-argument, but to fill off Richard's like pop song thing, I think of this episode almost like it's more of a classical composition. Like, the pieces by themselves, the storylines by themselves are kind of shitty. But when you combine everything that goes on in this episode, it comes out to be something greater than the sum of its parts. Like, I think that everything, like the Ogawa story, is kind of ridiculous. You never even meet her fiance. You know, it's like she's just spends 5 minutes talking about some guy that she's in a relationship with.
Yeah, they have this, you know, Dr. Crusher mentions, oh, I saw her talking with another woman. I was waiting for the revelation that, oh, that was really his sister. She came in to give mom's ring or something like that. But it's just
And I'm rolling my eyes because I didn't even pick up on this when I was watching the episode, and shame on me. But, you know, here we have, again, two female characters in TNG that are talking about a dude. And it's
it's always Crusher. Yeah. Crusher always wants to talk about who's fucking who. That's her. She's more interested in that than science. Yeah.
Even though, Ogawa's plot is nominally about her getting to that point where, you know, she's promoted to the next level. You know, she's got in a major milestone in her career. You know, she and Crusher have a close relationship, even as Boss said. You know, it's not about the two of them. It's about, but Ogawa's going to have a romantic crisis soon.
This is the second half of season 2 of Deep Space Nine. It aired right around the time that Whispers in Paradise aired.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So that's it. So it's like middle of season 2. I think that getting bad, like, I think all of the storylines by themselves aren't particularly great. I think the strongest part of this episode is actually the poker scene where they shoot between the two poker scenes. And I think that's the best part of the episode, even though I think the direction is terrible in it. Although I understand that they're on a budget and a timeline that they have to do. But if you go back and watch that poker scene, it is all just close-up shots of people's heads. No creativity to it whatsoever. But I love that scene because I think it just builds on the sort of relationship that is supposed to be happening on the ship that we've never seen before. Even the main bridge crew is having a conversation that we've never seen in an episode before, where Worf is freely telling Riker his opinion in a way that I don't really think happens all that often. Hmm. And I thought it was just, it's kind of unique and kind of interesting. And just, I think the episode is really just about building the relationship angle between the bridge crew and the people in general.
I'm struggling to articulate what I find, because this isn't a bad episode, but it just strikes me as so gimmicky.
Well,
Would you have, Eric, would you have rather, I was thinking that the problem here, if I was to like redo this episode, I'd keep it largely the same. I would adjust the direction so that no shot is ever not from one of the new underlings' points of view. There's a couple scenes in this where it is, things are sort of shot from the bridge crew's perspective and things from like Picard's perspective. I would change it so that the entire way that this is shot minimizes the bridge crew in almost every single interaction.
Yeah, I think that that's actually a good point. I mean, the gimmick of it is part of the reason why I don't like it. There's certain types of stories that people have a irrational reaction to. I mean, I don't like mafia stuff either, and hated The Sopranos, for example. But I just think that the gimmick is part of it, but I also do think that's a really good point that they don't even really keep with the gimmick of the episode. They're very inconsistent with it. And, you know, we do get certain things that are from the perspective of, like, for example, when the episode first starts out and Riker and Troy are sitting in 10 forward talking about like confidential personnel matters. Yeah. I mean, and they're sitting, the lower decks officers are sitting a few tables away and they're sort of going, what are they talking about? I don't know. What's going on? Who's getting promoted? And it's just kind of like, who the fuck cares? I don't know.
I think it ties into it is sort of out of the blue in terms of TNG, just because you've never seen this kind of, the only time you see people striving for anything are really scientists who are trying to invent something. Mm. You've never seen underlings trying to, you know, Riker turns down a commission every single other episode. You know, it's like you never see this kind of drive to get to a higher level of doing.
Well, there is Troy getting. Have you done that episode yet, where Troy takes her bridge?
Oh, that's the one after this, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then I won't spoil it.
She gets promoted.
Well, I mean,
spoilers, great.
It's a retrospective. I mean, go ahead, Eric. Sorry.
That's all right. The other thing I was going to say about that bridge scene that opens it up is that, you know, I don't watch Star Trek to watch people do administrative tasks. And there's a way to make that emotionally resonant. There's a way to make it about characters. But it, again, I think at this point in the show's run, and especially with having DS9 on the air for you know, a season and a half or whatever it was at this point, it feels like a cheat that television is just can't get away with anymore, about them having this conversation about characters that we've never met before, we've never seen before, except for, you know, the Bajorans. What's her name? Sato?
Yes.
And I don't care who gets the promotion. I have no emotional investment in these characters whatsoever. I don't even have an emotional investment in Ensign Sato, because she was in one episode of the show 3 years ago, and she wasn't even, I don't remember if she even talked in that episode.
I have to be honest, the first time I saw the episode, it wasn't until Picard meets up with her that I realized that was the same character.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's pretty probably very common to not recognize her whatsoever.
I mean, I think there is also a problem in that it can't seem to focus on any one of the Lower Decks characters. Is this about Sato trying to prove herself? Is this about the bartender's ability to bridge between the Lower Decks crew and the officers?
Is it about Hare's secret love for Riker?
Yeah.
We don't know.
You know, is this a story where dude is, you know, ends up getting a promotion he's not qualified for just through default, and his thoughts on that? Like, is this about Ogawa's love life? Like, yeah, I can't really tell which of the, and yet it's not juggling the ensemble well enough to be that.
Do you think? Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, do you think that's like, I kind of appreciated the fact that amongst the Lower Deck people, the sort of areas that people work in are portrayed very differently. I guess you could argue that, like, the doctor nursing is almost like a matriarchal type thing. It's like a very caring thing, where Beverly wants to be best friends. Engineering is interesting because Geordi is both annoyed and interested in what the Vulcan has to say about things. And the command group are, like, terrified of Riker and Picard. I just thought that was interesting that they sort of played off these different departments against each other like that.
they do have very different relationships with their superiors. Again, Ogawa and Beverly have gotten very close to each other at this point. They consider themselves... Oh, Eric's making a face. They consider themselves friends. And, you know, the episode ends with the bartender revealing to Worf that Sato considered him a friend. You have the bartender revealing to Worf that Sato considered Worf to be a friend and that Worf certainly had very strong hopes and he very much respected her in her. Eric's making that face again. But, you know, and then you have both Riker's guy and...
Hair?
That's what you're calling him?
Mm-hmm. Sam Hair Lavelle was that character's name.
Lavelle sounds like a hair product, so I think that works.
Sam L'Oreal Lavelle. Yes, it's.
What's in your hair? Oh, it's Lavelle. Oh, it looks wonderful. Can I touch it? Do not touch it.
I thought that guy did a good job of that character. Is written to be potentially annoying, and I don't find him too annoying.
Well, he is very. I mean, he comes off much younger and greener than everybody else. Like everybody else, does get to the point when they realize, like, okay. If they're on the cusp of graduating from the lower decks to eventually getting to the upper decks, possibly, and Ogawa and...
This is not literal, by the way. They're not, like, actually living in the bowels of the ship.
It's not the Titanic.
Coal. I know that.
but it's not the bridge, which is at the top. You know, anywhere, anywhere that's not the bridge is a lower deck, right?
Right.
But you have...
Look at Richard with his knowledge of Starship.
Hey, Richard, what's the name of the captain's yacht on the Enterprise? How deep into this are you? Do you remember the name of that thing?
Charlie?
No. Oh, close, actually. Anyway, Calypso. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
You know, you have the Vulcan, you have Ogawa, who both, you know, the two of them, number one, are... piecing together what exactly is going on, and even if they don't have the full picture, they kind of have an idea that Sato is doing some dangerous mission relating to Cardassians and this missing shuttlecraft, and Hare is all, oh, tell me what's happening, what's going on, we're friends, and the other two realize that even though they are friends with Sato, even though they are... they're in a different spot in their lives now, in their careers. They are at a point where they will have privileged information, and that has to come first in a lot of ways. And he doesn't seem to have quite made that realization yet. He doesn't seem to know how to accord himself as a professional, as a full officer.
Do you think that, and I'm looking at it now before people start screaming at me. I guess it's Sito and not Sato. I'm just looking at her name. But anyway, do you think at the end of this, right, when they're sitting at the bar and they learn that she's died, and Hare storms off saying that he's got to go, like no one tells him what's going on, and he says he's got to start duty in half an hour. Do you think that they're, I guess the ending scene with Worf, I almost didn't see the way that could go where if you were writing this episode for like a more modern audience, that their friendship would be changed forever? Am I reading too deeply into that?
I don't know. I feel like...
Who, Hare and Worf's?
No, Hare and the Ogawa and the Vulcan.
I mean, I definitely think if Satoshi or whatever her name is had survived...
Neko.
What?
Neko.
Neko. If Neko Wafer had survived... I love Neko Wafers. I like the licorice ones the best.
We're really sorry for the people that listen to your podcast, by the way, because we always come up with terrible nicknames for characters that we don't actually care about.
No, that's fine. You said so, Neko, but I thought
Neko Wafer,
whatever it is.
If Junior Mint had survived, she definitely would have gotten the promotion over Hare, because at the end of the day, I think she's a lot more able to handle sensitive information than he is.
Yes.
Although certainly, I believe that I think the show certainly believes he's going to grow into his promotion, as they do mention if he were totally inept, Riker would never even be considering him for the promotion. So.
Well, I guess I'd question the motives of anyone who's going for promotion in Data's position.
Where was Data this week, by the way?
He was there a little bit. They're going for the ops position, right? I think, yeah. He's there when they do the scanning. He recommends something or other, but Data's very limited.
Okay, this is kind of a geeky question, but why do they need a Gamma Shift ops officer? Because Data's a fucking android?
Right, but he does other stuff.
That would be my point, yeah.
Doesn't he?
He what?
He doesn't he just do other stuff though during other times?
I guess he's a person and he yeah. needs to have time off. Whatever.
And he but... needs to go on away missions and study other things. They can't just put him. It's kind of, you know, useless.
Oh, well, I guess it does make sense because I think all the way back in Data's day, they did establish that, I guess, Gamma Shift is supposed to be the night shift and Data is actually in command of the bridge during the night shift.
Right.
So Data's there in Gamma Shift. But they need someone to take over ops because, of course, Data... I mean, Data could do ops and command at the same time because he's fucking Data, but...
Right.
And I guess there is some training elements. I mean, they need, you know, assumedly there is a career track for ops where, you know, you'd have that position, then you'd graduate into a different position and maybe be a commanding officer at some point or whatever. I don't know.
I don't think that's true because if you remember way back in the episode, Remember Me...
Picard I don't!
Says, Picard says that the Enterprise has always been run by four people, so...
Really? Wow.
Yeah, but that was in the fantasy bubble that Crusher was in.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. I missed the joke there. I fucked everything up. I apologize.
We did that episode with you.
I know. It was your first one, I think. I don't think it was.
It was a callback. I tried.
It's about looping everything together. Do you guys think that... Explain to me, what exactly is operations on the Starship? What is that job?
They operate stuff.
Okay, so they're just like in charge of making sure everything is operating?
I think so.
Yeah, I guess facilitating, making sure the flow of information is getting to who it needs to get to and that the ship is running. If there's a problem with something, they let another. I mean, it's, I don't know.
Ops okay. kind of seems like the building manager to me or something.
Yeah, like I figure they're just like a general, like a producer in a way. You know?
Like, because she said Necco Wafer had to adjust the sensors to find a missing puppy, and apparently there are puppies on the Enterprise.
Right,
like, where do they go?
Yeah.
Was that a real line or was she kidding?
Where do they relieve themselves? That's my whole question. But anyway.
Don't we find that out in Enterprise?
I mean, there was the dog in Aquiel, right? So that dog existed. It turned into a monster that killed people.
It wasn't a dog, yeah.
But do they take them to the holodeck and then, like, when they shut the program down, the dog stuff goes away? Is that what happens?
There's probably a holodeck program that's just a perpetually throwing stick. Like, the dog changes it for, like, hours and hours.
I'd have to imagine.
I was always curious about what the ops did. I guess that makes sense considering Data is actually in charge of it.
Yeah.
But I guess let's get into the Cardassian aspect of it. Do you guys have any, coming from late in Deep Space Nine, do you have any take that's different on this Cardassian storyline? It's a very simple storyline.
It does get into one of the major themes of at least the early arcs of DS9. So you have the character Kira, who is Bajoran, who had grown up in a very similar childhood to Necco Wafer. You know, she grew up in a camp just as we are in now in Trump's America. And she essentially, Kira goes through a journey in the first few seasons to the point where she goes from hating every single Cardassian on site to recognizing that there are good Cardassians, that there are Cardassians who are not warlike or who view their, you know, just as in, for example, World War II, someone like General Rommel, for example, is generally believed to have been, you know, he believed in the military glory of Germany, but all that Nazi shit was a problem. So this character seems to, he believes in the military glory and honor of Cardassia, but feels that the way that Cardassia is actually conducting itself at this point is in the wrong. And so what he wants to do what he can in order to stop their bloodthirstiness, their expansionism or whatever.
Yeah.
And again, in some ways it's redundant. It's going through some themes that DS9 has already gone through in more sophisticated ways. Although, I mean, this episode is kind of the Training Wheels version of DS9 in some slight ways.
I feel certainly in terms of anything Cardassian that TNG does is sort of proto where Deep Space Nine will take them eventually. Go ahead.
I was just going to say TNG, whenever they do Cardassian episodes, with maybe the exception of Chain of Command two-parter, they feel like a very TNG version of the Cardassians.
Oh, yeah.
You know, even the occupation doesn't seem nearly as brutal as it obviously is established to be in Deep Space Nine, which is almost like a, you know, not quite a Holocaust analogy, but close. I mean, working people to death in camps and, yep. you know, all that kind of stuff, and just mass executions and stuff like that. So, you know, I think that the Cardassian in this episode, we only see one Cardassian. He's a nice guy. He seems to be like forthright. But it is a sort of, it is a sort of very sort of, I guess, generic Cardassian plot.
Yeah, I mean, it is a very TNG version of it. It's the one that – a big thing that we've talked about DS9 is that the Federation goes everything at face value. Everybody is who they say they're going to be. This is a Cardassian who is very much who he says he's being in this. He's not doing these wheels within wheels thing. He's not trying to get – you know, himself into a better position by the end. He's legitimately doing what he feels is right for his planet and the galaxy at large.
Yeah.
That's, as far as that goes, DS9 Cardassians will be a lot more complex.
Yeah, I think it just ties into what I was talking about earlier. It's just the storyline itself is not particularly anything. It's more about the outcome, like... Yeah. You know, if I was motivated to, I might argue against. I don't even really understand why you need a Bajoran in the first place to go across the border. But it's like, I guess it doesn't really matter. Would be my ultimate point, is where it comes down to. Go ahead.
I was going to say there's an element to that. Maybe that's one of the other reasons I don't like Lower Decks is there is kind of a feeling of the plot is sort of leading the characters around.
Yeah.
I think the Cardassian Bajoran stuff is a perfect example where, you know, the Lower Decks characters need to learn an important lesson about the duty of sacrifice. And so one of them needs to die, and it kind of gets engineered that she has to go with this guy, even though it doesn't really make any sense.
Right. Well, I watched this episode with my boyfriend, and he's, you know, seen a few episodes here and there, and
Donald Trump.
Yes.
Sorry, no, go ahead.
No.
Thank you. I'm vomiting now.
Oh, God. Yeah, it all started when he grabbed me by the pussy. And, you know, but he was joking while we were watching. He was like, all right, is that one the one who's going to die? Which one's going to die? You know, and of course, she dies at the end. He's like, I feel like every episode you've shown me of Star Trek ends with somebody dies and they get a very tearful eulogy for that. And, which is, it's true. Like, he called this, what was he called in the episode? He's like, they should call this Star Funeral instead, because, you know, or Space Hearse or something like that. But you have, I guess this episode revolves around, the episode depends upon whether or not we feel... whether or not we mourn Sito at the end of the episode. If we do, then the episode's done its job. It's supposed to get us to care about the fate of this person who is not a main character and therefore not protected by the fact that she's a main character. If her, you know, her death is never going to be remarked upon again, it's just going to get this eulogy at the end, and that's going to be the entirety of that. And if we understand that this is what life is for somebody who's not on the bridge crew, then it's done its job. I feel by Eric's reaction to that he doesn't necessarily feel it has, and so the episode hasn't succeeded in that way, I guess. If you do care about her, the way it is a success.
Would you agree, yeah. Eric?
I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I know you so well.
And you'd agree that you didn't relate to her at the end, or you didn't find it emotionally satisfying, I guess.
No, because I don't really know who she is, and I don't really know who any of them are, frankly. And I think that it's, you know, I almost said it was insulting that the show brings these characters in and then we never see them again. It's not insulting. I mean, TNG is what it is, and it's a very good show, but it definitely has its limitations and blind spots.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, it is one of those things where I don't get these characters being established very well. I think there's too many of them. And, you know, a Neco Waver at the end of the episode, she has a glorious sacrifice and has to die. Okay.
I mean, it's not even like the Cardassian does his mission and he assumedly gets home. So really, it sucks for her and her friends. But
and I think also, too, I mean, not, you know, not to put a too fine a point on this or keep talking about her specifically, but I think the other reason why I don't really care about her very much is because Worf seems to care about her a lot, and I don't like Worf. So I don't think that Worf has very good judgment. So,
yeah.
Well, he gave her that great test where you admit that the test is unfair. I don't really know how well that works in real life. But
I was going to say, I wish that would have worked in college.
it's unfair that I have to actually work to get past this test, but, you know, it is what it is.
Well, that's how the millennials are taking their college experiences, right?
We're millennials,
Richard.
I know,
we're not like the millennials,
because I work at a college, and trust me, I see these college kids, and they are nothing like us.
I don't think they're millennials.
What year is the earliest millennial?
19, depending on your point of view, I think it's 80 or 81.
Yeah, it's probably like 80.
I thought 85 was.
No.
No.
Yes, because between 80 and 85 is the Xennial generation, which is a cusp generation between Generation X and Millennial. It belongs to neither and yet has qualities of both.
Millennials are people that are like, at least, I think 35 is the cutoff.
Listen, it's not that I hate millennials. I hate 20-year-olds.
That's fine.
Yeah, well, I think
I know everybody does.
The older millennials are still okay. I think once you're born around 1990, things start to get a little haywire.
I think that we're all just getting old.
Probably. Well. I hate these younger, lower deck up and comers getting up in my business. I'll say that I find the ending to this episode be one of the remarkably few TNG episodes that I find emotionally affecting. There's not many of them, which is kind of the surprising thing to me. Inner Light, Sarek would be one. Mm. Those are the episodes, and this one, I think, where I actually get a little, like, the room gets a little bit dusty. Not the Worf thing, but more the scene right before the Worf. I think the Worf stuff is a little bit cheesy, actually. The stuff before that, I find Picard's speech over the loudspeaker basically to be more effective. I really like it, and I think it, I don't know if it's just because I'm stuck in the mire of season 7. This feels really different to me. This is not Liaisons. This is like something that's kind of saying something. I don't know. Go ahead to feed off of that, whatever that I waded into the waters and came up with nothing there.
No, I think you're right. I mean, it's at least, I guess, at the end of the day, while I don't really like this episode very much, I do respect it for at least trying to do something. And so much of what Richard just looked up Liaisons on his phone, because I don't think he remembered which one it was and made a horrible face, that I respect the fact that it is trying to do something. I don't know if trying to do something is enough at this point. And, you know, I'm also probably having a different reaction to it because I am not stuck in the middle of season 7 of TNG. I just watched this one episode. So it's not like I'm having like episode after episode after episode of just mediocrity thrust upon my eyes every week.
And you also, let's also say from a meta level, you watch this episode alongside two DS9 episodes, which were doing things that were very different from the rest of DS9 this week. And so, you know, even more so, that was a very strong taste. This feels weak in comparison.
Yeah. I mean, just to pull back the curtain a little bit for your listeners and for you, Wes, is that, you know, the same week that I watched Lower Decks for your podcast, I watched Covenant and It's Only a Paper Moon. So,
I'm throwing up the sort of, the teasers, I guess, for what would actually be the more developed main course here. I mean, I can totally understand that. And I like to sort of fill you in. We just did Sub Rosa, right? And
I'm so sorry.
That was one that I was kind of hoping that one had been available. I would have suggested it.
Sub Rosa was interesting because Sub Rosa kind of gets a pass from me just because it's not boring. Like, in, you know, I don't think it's very effective. And I think they tend to get a little bit campy. But at this point, I'm like, TNG, just give me an episode where you try something a little bit different. And so I was a little bit lighter. And the person who watched it with me actually kind of really liked Sub Rosa just because of that fact.
It's a hilarious failure rather than a boring success.
Right. It's not right. Liaisons is a boring success. It's like, this is a fine episode that's fucking boring as shit.
I'd say it's a boring failure, but
Sub Rosa is a disaster.
I mean, not to turn this into a big discussion about TNG season 7, but I just remember, you know, when we did when we covered Liaisons on Trek about, you know, I think that I actually had never seen that episode of the show before. I don't know how I missed it.
Yeah.
I had no recollection of it existing whatsoever. And I think I probably did watch it at some point, but it's just so boring and has no point whatsoever that I completely forgot it existed.
The aliens are just wearing black leotards. They didn't even try to make the aliens look like anything. They're just like, here, wear some skin tight black spandex, and we'll just call this thing a day. All right, guys, we're done talking about Lower Decks. I think you've been very patient and kind with your time. We're going to take a little break. I'm going to play an audio clip. Me, Eric, and Richard are going to come back and give our final thoughts and feelings about Lower Decks.
How long have you served on board the Enterprise, Ensign?
7 months, sir.
I understand that you've been recommended for the ops position. Do you think you're up to it?
I do, sir.
I'm not so sure. I'm concerned about your record.
Sir?
The incident that you were involved in at the Academy.
With all due respect, that was 3 years ago. My record since then...
Doesn't matter how long ago it was, Ensign. Would you do something like that again?
I can assure you, sir, that I would never, never jeopardize lives by participating in...
A daredevil stunt? I would certainly hope not. But what concerns me is that you participated in a cover-up that impeded an official investigation into the death of a cadet.
Sir, I know I should have told the truth right from the start.
Yes, you should. But you didn't. Instead, you joined with the others to pretend that that was simply an accident.
All right, guys. Lower Decks. It's episode 15 of season 7. We're closing in on the end here, getting a little nostalgic, a little dusty-eyed, and all that good stuff. Guys, we have a scale of 1 to 5. 1 is ultimate garbage you never need to see again. 2 is a storyline with problems that could have been okay. 3 is an average episode of Star Trek. 4 is an episode you'd show to somebody, like Richard's boyfriend, who had never sort of been experienced to Star Trek, and you think they'd react to it okay. 5 is a classic episode. What do you think about this one?
I'd give it between a 3 and a 4. It's one that, I mean, certainly it would not make my top 10 of Star Trek episodes, but if I were to go through and cull, I mean, how many episodes of this series are there?
178.
Yeah, so if I were doing, you know, 50 episodes of TNG, it might make that cut, for example.
Wow, that's interesting. Well, I'm surprised it's that low. I guess it makes sense when you think about how many episodes there are. So you're saying top quarter.
I'm just making numbers up.
Well, when you consider that the first two seasons of the show are 52 episodes, and yeah, probably like two of them would make the top 100.
No, that makes sense. I mean, if you think about it, it'd be one out of, you know, it's the best one out of four. If you were to pick four episodes, it's likely this is the best one of the four. You know what I mean? Like, that seems fair to me.
Yeah, so there's Face of the Enemy, The Inner Light, Sub Rosa, and Lower
Code Decks. Of Honor.
I thought we agreed to never talk about Code of Honor ever again.
I love Code of Honor. No, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. So you think it's between a 3 and a 4, somewhere
I'd
around
say.
Those? Okay.
Even knowing where it went, I did enjoy watching it again. It was good to see again if it isn't quite as good as other episodes. Again, it's a, and maybe I am grading on a curve because it's season 7.
Sure. Eric?
I will give it a 2.25.
All right.
I think
so. You think it's better than 37 episodes of Star Trek? No, go ahead.
No, I just think, I mean, I'm being kind of funny with the rating, but you know, I don't want to give it a 3 because I think it's not an average episode of TNG. I think it's okay, but you know, I don't, you know, again, grading on a curve for season 7, it's probably one of the highlights of season 7, but I don't think that this episode would be remarkable in another season of the show. I think in season 3, 4, 5, or maybe even 6, I think that this episode would mostly have been forgotten. And it's only because of its placement in the 7th season that people remember it at all.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that it's not an iconic episode of the show, and it's not a representative episode of the show either.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, so we didn't even talk about the fact that Geordi is like a huge dick in the episode for no reason. So that it's that kind of stuff where I think they were really, you know, hitting the limits of the concept of the show. The show was ready to end. I mean, this is late even in the 7th season. This is what, like episode 20 or something. So yeah, I think they were getting tired. They were getting ready for it to be over. And it's an interesting concept that I'm not very interested in, but it also just, I think, doesn't have like too much of a point and makes the makes our main cast members out to be a little bit more of assholes or whatever than they probably are.
I'll just say what I think, I guess, and then we can get into a little bit of a wrap up there. I guess I'll give this a 4 out of 5. I think it definitely does benefit, as you're saying, just by being in season 7. It's probably more highly regarded than it could have been. I think if you threw this into another season, it's probably around a 4. I do think that the script is really good. It's probably Rene Echevarria's, sorry, people always get upset when I mispronounce his name. Rene's probably his best script. And I think that it tries to do something different. I think it's memorable in that kind of a way. I think that it's, you know, it's got something interesting going at the heart of it. It hits me emotionally, as I said. And I think that it is a, I could definitely show this to someone, I think, and be okay with it. I don't think there's any sort of embarrassment that would come my way. But yeah, that's about it. I'll give it a 4 out of 5. I enjoyed watching it. I think that's something to say about it, late in season 7 as we are now. Do you guys think that it was appropriate? Quick thoughts on what you think if Guinan and Whoopi Goldberg were still on the show, how this episode would have been different with Ben would clearly have been Guinan. Would that have been better or worse?
I don't know if it would have worked. I think that Guinan would have had a very different role in the episode. Yeah. Also, Whoopi Goldberg was completely gone at this point. Is that why they didn't have her? Was she like off?
Yeah, doesn't make an appearance in season 7.
Yeah, again, I think All Good Things would have been a perfect opportunity to bring her in if you could have brought her in at all.
What was she doing? Was she doing the road show of Sister Act the musical or something?
Auditioning for The View. I have no idea what she was doing. I don't know why they didn't bring her back, and they brought her back for the movie, obviously.
We didn't even really touch upon the fact that, you know, Guinan as magical Negro trope, and then they bring in Ben, who's the,
I know another
you know, it's like, I don't know about this. And
but he's a card-playing con man of a black guy, which is I actually like the Ben character. I think he's pretty good. I'm kind of joking about it. But it is funny that all the bartenders are black people who are sort of above the fray in terms of they know best.
He's allowed to do the social strictures which define the, you know, which divide the rest of the lower decks from the bridge crew don't apply to him.
I think that this is unthinking.
It's the well-meaning thing that, you know, Stephen King admitted to when he realized that, in trying to overcorrect and represent, you know, people of different races, he's accidentally, you know, gone too far and made them too holy in some ways. And, you know, all right, dial back and make slightly more realistic. And
sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Given what DS9 does for, you know, Ben and Jake Sisko, for example, I would say that, again, it's a well-meaning overcorrection, if anything.
Yeah, I need to talk to you guys once DS9 is over about all that, because I find that such an interesting thing. But anyway, let's see here. What do I want to wrap this? Oh, just the Guinan thing. I think Guinan actually might have made the episode worse. She would have basically just told them she would have told them the correct answer. But I like the fact that Ben is wildly misinformed.
With the Canada.
He tells them about Canada and there's something else. Oh, he's passing along the rumor that Spock was inside the thing that the Cardassian was in. So he's clearly not Guinan on that level. But I think they needed someone who was not basically, you know, omniscient like Guinan kind of can be in some ways,
or maybe he was fucking with them,
right. Or maybe it really was Spock and he was dressed as a Cardassian in order for a double secret whammy.
Maybe Ben was Spock dressed up in the finest camouflage imaginable. I don't know.
Well,
I thought that was interesting. I do miss Guinan though. Guinan, what a great character, and it's unfortunate we don't see her anymore.
She's very briefly in Nemesis, I believe.
Is she in Nemesis?
I think, yeah.
I don't remember that.
We didn't watch Nemesis yet. No, so I won't say what scene, or don't tell him the plot. But
oh, we okay. have two more next gen.
I think uh-huh. I can imagine where she would be. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So
she's
you
definitely
know.
In Generations, which you guys have seen. Yeah, and I think that's it, guys. And thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank Talking you very much. It's always a
Lower
pleasure.
Decks. Yeah, it's always a good talk. And let's see here. You guys are going to be back for Preemptive Strike, which is
yes,
the
we will.
Penultimate episode of TNG. But guys, yeah, why don't you let the people know if they enjoyed listening to you talk where they can go to find Trek About.
They can go to trekaboutshow.com, which contains all, I don't know, let's say 814 episodes of the show at this point. we're
how
starting.
How many episodes of those would be a 2 out of 5, I think. Let's see. go ahead.
75% of them. I actually don't like Star Trek very much.
This is the most... this is the ultimate expression of hate watching that we're doing right now.
Do you guys know there's a podcast where the entire thing of the podcast is to they watch the same movie every day for a year, and they record weekly or something, and they talk about the same movie every week
Are
for that year?
Are they trying to drive themselves
what movie?
Insane?
They're
is
watching
it Gene Dealman?
It's Grown Ups by Adam Sandler.
And you know...
It's hit this. It's hit this like extremely sort of bizarre level where you know you're like a year into this thing of watching this movie every day, and you just start to lose your mind. Sometimes on the worst of worst days, Star Trek to me can feel a little bit like that. I still love it, but you know there's only so many times you can be like, oh Jesus Christ, another shuttlecraft and all that.
But the thing is, sometimes Star Trek can be really, really good. It can be amazing.
Right,
the reason that we run Star Trek podcast is because there is something really fucking special in this. And even a bad episode has a little germ of something to it. Adam Sandler movies have never had that. So.
They should have Adam Sandler on Star Trek. Anyway.
All I have to say about the existence of that podcast is I guess they don't have kids or...
No, probably
jobs.
Not.
I
yeah.
don't know.
They're not criminal. They're not career criminals, and that's all we get. You know that's good.
Yes, they were apparently successful enough to own a DVD. So, and you know, you just keep going forward. Hopefully, they get the like. I would hope that they started with like the DVD, and then they switched to Blu-ray 26 weeks into it. You know, and they started talking about that. It would be good, guys. Check out trekaboutshow.com. You can follow these guys on Twitter and all that stuff. I'll put all the links in the video description. If you're on YouTube, a like and a comment's appreciated. If you're on iTunes, rating review helps get the show out there. Rate us on all your podcatchers. You can go to facebook.com/thepenskepodcast. Join the conversation there. Go to patreon.com/thepenskepodcast. Get some extra content. We've got Highlander 1 and 2 coming out. We talk about movies and stuff not related to Star Trek and episodes of shows and stuff like that. It's all very good. All right. All the housekeeping out of the way. Guys, thank you very much again. And guys listening out there, thanks very much for listening. You'll see Trek About in a couple weeks when we come back for Preemptive Strike. See you later.